Smash cut.
A technique in film where one scene abruptly cuts to another without transition.
Much like a typical conversation with me and my friends when discussing film, television, music, video games, or anything else that happens to come up. This is the idea behind the show, Smash Cuts.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Smash Cuts. I'm Rich Gavon, and with me is Jacqueline Kemick.
Hello!
And we are coming off of a, I guess it's 2 weeks ago now that Wonder Woman came out, or is it like a week and a half?
Yeah.
So we're in a super, we're way into summer movies now. This is
yes,
not, which I can't so even exciting. Believe. Yeah, kids, that's crazy because it's like June
Wonder
already.
Woman. Yeah, I know. It came out of nowhere, and I mean, like, it really does seem like we've been waiting for this summer for so long that you almost are. It's like you're at the top of an escalator. That the escalator was really, really, really long, and you're just kind of sitting there. And then all of a sudden, you're like, "Oh crap! I'm gonna fall if I don't."
Yeah, I know.
Step. You're like, "Oh, I'm already." We're here. We're in it. Oh shit!
Yeah, it's crazy. And then things are coming out left and right. Like I didn't see The Mummy is what came out this weekend. I didn't.
Yeah, I'm hoping I might go see that tomorrow on my day off. I do want to see it.
I want to see it. I'm just. It's funny because that was the one movie. It's like all the, you know, regular critics, but then all regular people are like, wah, wah, you know.
Oh, really?
Kind of not happy
yeah, well,
with
I mean,
it.
Yeah, whatever. It's going to be what it's going to be. Like, I'm probably still going to enjoy it. And I think, I don't know, I think my boyfriend might want to go see it too. And he's not a big movie theater kind of guy. So that to me seems like, oh, well, that's cool. You know?
Yeah.
It actually has some appeal for someone who doesn't ever want to go to the theater. So.
Yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. I'm, you know, they're putting a lot on this one because it's supposed to be the first of the Dark Universe
trilogy. Universal Movie Monsters, yeah.
So, but yeah, so I guess the next time we record, one of us will have seen it and can tell us. But movies are coming out so fast now that it's going to have to be, it's a race against time whether you get to see it in the good theater or not because we've got so many other things coming up.
Yeah, things are going to push out pretty soon, I'm sure. Push out of, like, the good big theaters just to make room for the new ones.
Yeah.
But you know what? I know I don't mean to stick on The Mummy because I can't help, but if anybody else out there listening knows this song, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But every time I see those trailers, or if anybody, like, mentions The Mummy, or any mummy, really, ever, at any time, there's this song that is just like, it's the mummy.
Oh yeah, that's from do the mummy, that's from Mad Monster Party.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I can't, it's always playing in my head, it's the mummy.
Yeah. Oh, I love that
and I always have to do a dance with it. You can't do it without moving.
Yeah, that's funny that you brought that up.
Because
I always think that I always think of Mad Monster Party when I think of The Mummy and all them. Because have you ever seen that movie? That
claymation? I think I've actually seen it. I just know that song.
Oh, how funny! Oh, I love that movie. It's all the horror people are in it. Like what's his name? Bela Lugosi and it's a stop motion animation filmation thing. So it was done in the 60s.
But, man, I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, I think it's on Amazon Prime or it's on Netflix. I know it's on one of them because right around Halloween, I made the mistake of putting it on because I thought, you know, Xavier would enjoy it. And I realized I must have had much more patience as a child because it is so slow. You know, like that's one of those when it really takes its time to tell the story. So
that's
funny. So I know
Speaking
we're avoiding.
Speaking of which, before we get into like superhero movies and like action movies, let's just take a moment to appreciate It Comes at Night. Which, talk about a slow burn. Holy cow.
Oh,
I was not expecting that movie.
Oh, so you saw that movie? You did get to see it?
Yes, I went and saw it, and it was not anything like I was expecting. Now, granted, I only saw one preview, and I think I was only really half watching because I was doing something else, which happens way too often, unfortunately. I'm very bad about that. But it was a commercial break, so, you know, whatever. But I really thought it was going to be some sort of like a monster movie. I thought it was going to be a horror film. And I guess you can still categorize it as a horror film, but it is not that kind of horror film.
That's what I heard. I heard it makes the commercials make it look like it's one of the, you know, like Ju-Ron or something like that. You know what I mean? Like one of those really scary horror films. But then I did hear something that it's really not a horror film at all, right?
And it is. I mean, I understand why they would categorize it like that. So, I mean, I get it. But I don't know if, I mean, I need to go back and rewatch that trailer because I'm like, I don't know if that was false advertising because I feel like it's doing the movie a disservice.
Because
I feel like the entire audience, including myself, was kind of like, so what?
You know?
But the movie wasn't bad. It was actually very good. It was actually a very good movie. But in that vein of like Audition or something where the whole movie is just this tense weight, you know what I mean, of like what's happening. And very much also like I almost hesitate to bring this up because it's not quite the same feel, but in Signs, you know how like there's something going on for most of the movie, but you don't, like, you're following just one family who doesn't understand what's happening exactly. And it's similar to that in a way. The Mel Gibson, you know, Signs, I feel like they were more connected, whereas in this one there's no like TV or radio or anything like that. You just see these people and there's something happening outside and you don't know what it is. You don't know if it's a thing. You don't know if, I mean, there are people out to get you and you meet other people and you don't know who you can trust. And it's very interesting. It's just a very, it's a really well told story about a family trying to do its best to survive in this extreme new twist kind of environment. But again, anybody who is interested in those kinds of movies, 100% go see it. But I have to admit, myself and my friend who went to go see it, we were totally expecting to go see like horror monster movie, you know what I mean? And we were kind of thrown by it. But I really did like it. It just, you do leave with more questions than you had going in. But if you're just taking it as a beautiful kind of look into what people will do to help their family survive, to try and help, you know, them protect each other when you have no idea what's going on and you don't ever really get an answer because there is no emergency broadcast system, you know, the revolution will not be televised, you know, kind of thing. So I highly recommend it. Just know what you're walking into, because I feel like it's probably going to get either bad reviews or just a lot of flack because people are walking in expecting something completely different.
That's, it so reminds me of a, and I can't remember the name of this movie. It was in the 90s. It was a, I guess it was a Russian film, but it was billed almost like the next Blair Witch. And it was the first, I would say the first, the first 30 minutes were, what, they weren't terrifying. They were tense because this kind of killer is chasing after this woman and she's hiding and you're with her, you know, it's all point of view at that point. And then all of a sudden, once she gets saved, it became a Russian espionage movie. And we were like, what? Like, because it was so tense. It was so great up until that point, you know, and it sounds like this is like that kind of, because even the commercials, they really build it as the next Blair Witch. And then we went there and it's like,
that's funny.
This is the next James Bond. This is the next Blair Witch movie.
Yeah.
I just can't remember the name of that movie, but it was in the 90s that it came out. But it sounds similar.
Yeah, I'm not recognizing it. And I totally get they want to put butts in seats, but they're not really serving themselves if, you know, they're misrepresenting. So I don't know. I'm never quite sure why movies want to do that. Like they feel like they have to trick the audience to get in.
Favorite is when a movie's a musical and they don't give any hint at all that it's a musical until people are sitting and watching it, you know, like I think Nine. Yeah. Cause Nine was like that. Nine didn't give you any hint that it was, I knew it was a musical obviously, but anybody watching it was like, had no idea they were about to see a musical. Or Moulin Rouge, actually. That was a surprise.
That was a surprise. Like, I knew it was going to be a musical because I knew they had been playing some of the songs on the radio. But, like, They didn't understand, I think, how much.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah, I was blown away because I didn't expect it. We saw it in a sneak preview, and the reason I was interested in it was because of Ewan McGregor, and I was like, oh, I want to see what this is. And I liked Baz Luhrmann, obviously. So yeah. I didn't even know it was going to be a musical. And I was, you know, I sat there like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever, you know.
This is amazing.
Yeah, where everybody's like, what the? They're singing popular songs. I don't get it. But yeah, no, speaking of non-musicals, I did get to see the awesome superhero movie called Captain Underpants.
Oh, how did you like it?
That was a lot of fun. That was awesome. Xavier laughed about, I would say, just like a good hysterical laughter for many parts of that film where you just...
That's awesome.
Unusual to see that, you know, it's just something just catches their... And then just still even laughing about it after the fact, so...
That's really great.
But I don't know if you've seen anything on it or...
No, all I know is one of my friends who wanted to go see Wonder Woman, she's like, I tried to talk my son into it, and... He made me go see Captain Underpants with him, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, did you like it? And she's like, he did.
Yeah.
I think she was just mad.
Well, I can kind of see, because I was when I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, is this one to recommend to Jackie? Because it is a kid's movie, and it does have a lot of funny things, but it is a lot of, like, potty humor in a weird way.
It's so funny that you know.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if the killer toilet scene is going to be Jackie's favorite in this.
No, I know. It's one of those things that it's like, I feel bombarded with it. You know what I mean? And it's not like I'm some prude. I just have never really understood why the gross bathroom stuff is funny. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to be mean or weird or snooty at all. I just am like, that's not funny. That's horrible. You know, like, that poor person. And I don't want to see that. That's gross.
I know. It's, and yeah, because at one point, you know, one of the characters gets flushed down a giant robot toilet that's attacking everybody. And, you know, so, and then the green stuff that's all inside of it is, you know, is what makes him get some superpowers. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's a lot of little funny things like that. But the voice, the voice work on it, because it was Kevin Hart and Josh Hutcherson, I think is his name. And then, what's his name? From The Office, Andy, is the main guy, the Captain Underpants guy. So,
oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, so definitely worth, he surprised me twice, because he was also in the Lorax movie. I don't know if you saw that Dr. Seuss one.
No, I missed that one.
That one surprised me, because that one was really, really good. Definitely worth seeing if you haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out, too.
Yeah, I know.
Many things, if I miss them, and then I just, like, they never really come up again. So I haven't even thought about that one.
I know, yeah. Well, yeah, the only reason, you know, if I didn't constantly have, like, kids' channels on, I wouldn't know about, like, some of the shows I know, like, we watched Loud House. Like, I've never even, should know about it, but, you know, it's about a little boy and his seven or eight sisters and, you know, but all this stuff, I'm completely disconnected from the real world. Like, I have all this information about, you know, Loud House and SpongeBob and all that, and I'm struggling to keep up with my other real shows. Like, I just started House of Cards. So
House of Cards. Oh my gosh. Yeah. What a journey. I love it.
I think Entertainment Weekly ruined something, but I'm trying to get through it without paying too much attention. But yeah, it's been good. But now,
well, I have to say, I think that this particular season was a little predictable in where they went with it, but still done so well that you're not mad at it. You're just like, Yeah.
I mean, because last season was rough. I mean, that was some rough territory.
Well, and again, I think we talked about this in a previous podcast. In the seasons, the early seasons, I mean, it's not like it's got 12 seasons or anything, but in the first few seasons, you really see the Underwoods as a team. And last season, you saw that team split. And I didn't like it, you know? I mean, I understood it. I understood valid reasons, you know? I mean, you almost want them to continue to be a unit. So that's why I thought I had a really rough time with last season. Even though it was still really good.
Do you find watching him, because, all right, when this show started, you know, the idea of a president being, you know, this deceitful or evil in the background was just kind of a flight of fancy, and not to get political, but we're in such a weird temperature right now that it almost makes you look at that show and start to blame it in a weird way, because you were rooting for that cat for Frank, you know, while you're watching.
Yeah.
So the climate is definitely a different climate than it was when that show first started.
Well, and that's something that I think people of all kinds of different political backgrounds can maybe agree on, where part of what has seeped into politics is entertainment. And that can be on both sides. I'm not trying to, you know, be crazy here. I'm just saying that I think that people want something that's entertaining for them more than really to do the research and see, you know, whose views they align with in deeper things than the surface points on both sides. You know, I mean, again, I think I personally am an independent, because I will always say that, you know, I want to take a look at the candidates and see who I really do agree with on whatever issue it might be. I never liked the idea of locking myself into one side or another, but yeah, I, you know, even that is tough. But that's also one of those things where I'm like, I'm not religious because I don't necessarily believe any one religion. So anyway, I think maybe we're getting off topic here.
I know, but what's interesting, one thing that it made me think about was, I almost wish that they had kept it ambiguous, which party was which, you know, because then you could kind of go in there without any kind of thinking about either party.
Right.
Because I think there was a way to do that without, it wouldn't have mattered what party he is. He is who he is. You know what I mean? The people, all the people, never matters what party they're in, because, you know,
well,
it's on both sides, you know?
But even in the show, you see it on both sides. I mean, you see Snake in the Grass on both sides of the aisle in that show. So, I mean, I think the reason that they played it the way that they did was because they were trying to not be perceived as the, like, liberal media kind of thing. You know what I mean? Where they were like, we're going to make the bad guy a Democrat so that we don't anger the Republicans or give them more ammo for, you know, oh, of course, the bad guy's a Republican, which I kind of don't blame them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
you know, I get it. So, I mean, for that, I don't really blame them for trying to smooth that before it can happen. But I will say that I know I saw Kevin Spacey on interviews say, this is before Trump was president, you know, like years ago. And, but someone had asked him, like, who is he talking to when he's talking to the camera? And he answered Donald Trump. He answered Donald Trump. And I was like, oh,
that's
wow.
Pretty funny. Yeah. Well, and let's just say we're not sure if by the time this podcast airs, if he'll still be president. We'll see what happens after this week.
We'll see. Yeah, that's a whole nother thing.
Oh,
that's a whole nother special.
That's going to be a movie in itself. I was telling somebody.
Oh, my God, we're going to get so much material out of that forever. Yeah. And again, on both sides, because everybody wants to know what's happening.
Oh,
you know,
like. Just like I just watched the Bernie Madoff movie on HBO had done it, starring Robert De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same kind of thing where you watch it and it's interesting, you know, everyone has their opinions about Bernie Madoff, and it's not like they canonize him at all in this movie, but it did make me think differently about his sons, because you know, for a lot of the for everything that was coming out, you always thought his sons were in on it as well. How could they not be? They're part of the business, but. But when you see the movie and you just see how blindsided his entire family was, it's. Yeah, pretty crazy.
Interesting.
I know we buried the lead here because, you know, we talked about superhero movies and Wonder Woman came out, and we haven't said one word about it. So I'll just say right off the bat, I hated the movie.
Wonder Woman? No!
It did. Liar. It works completely against what women stand for. No, I'm just kidding. Oh. Yeah, can you imagine?
Well, it was a good tie-in with Robin Wright, right? We were talking about...
Yeah, I know, yeah. That's true, yeah.
House of Cards. No, I have such a crush on her. I really do. Like, oh my God. And I didn't when I was younger. Honestly, like Princess Bride, I love that movie. Yeah. But I always thought she was kind of too
one-dimensional.
Sweet. Yeah, she was too, yeah, exactly, one-dimensional, perfect way to put it. I was just like, yeah, no, no. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, I'm just like, who is this powerhouse woman who I am totally in love with? You know what I mean?
It's like she had to get older, because every movie, I mean, let's see, when she was with Sean Penn, she made a movie with him, and then she also did Toys, the one with Robin Williams. And it was
I forgot she did that.
Yeah, and it was always kind of like, I always felt like whatever I saw her in, she was miscast. It almost feels like she had to get older in order to find the correct roles for herself. You know,
and I honestly think she is more beautiful now than she was when she was younger, and she was gorgeous when she was younger. But she has so much character now, and she's obviously so fit and gorgeous and everything. But like, I love her style. I love everything about her, her strength, her humor in interviews.
Yeah.
I mean, I just adore her.
And she was awesome in Wonder Woman. I mean, even though she,
she was the best Amazon.
Yeah.
She was.
And let's just say, you know, no surprise. I love the film, and I'm sure you did too. But I have to say, just what was so great about some of the amazing things about that. Just to see the Amazons fighting in the beginning of the movie, but then to see it in the daylight on a beach, you know, in a beautiful setting, and you're seeing the most amazing sequences that I haven't felt that exhilarated watching something like that. And it was, and I think, what was it, like the first, I forgot what somebody said, it was like the first 25 minutes of the movie, there's not one man in sight, you know, like it's...
That's awesome.
Yeah, like it takes a while for... And even when we do get Chris Pine, it's not like he comes in and takes over the movie. Like, I'll take this now, ladies. You know, he's...
Right, right. No, I think that was very intentional.
And they didn't do Damsel in Distress with him either. They actually made him a character rather than what they usually do with... You know, usually in these situations, they take the... They give the male
the female
part.
Take the script and just reverse it. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
And I felt like they didn't do that this time.
No, but I did like how they threw his character off guard. Like, it's almost like you could tell his character was used to being the attractive, dashing man.
Yeah.
And kind of having to say, like, no, I'm better.
I'm not a regular guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I'm better than average, above average, or whatever, you know, in a couple different instances, not just that one. But I did like that. It did suffer from exactly what, you know, I thought it was going to suffer from. It was very predictable. You could basically see the entire film in the first act, including the big twist ending. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Although I was kind of a dummy about it. I didn't connect the dots with, what's his name? Lupin.
Yeah, Lupin.
Spoilers. I was thinking, though, you know, there was an interesting aspect to this story, which is a lot of times the villain and the hero need to know each other in order for both of them to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. I heard something. Okay. And I think that the movie does suffer, not suffer, but the movie's villain suffers a little bit because he isn't really aware, or at least who we think the villain is.
You don't see that perspective.
Yeah, he's not really aware of her. So when there is that kind of confrontation, it is more for her than for him. Like, I don't really care about him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he definitely becomes a throwaway character. God. At that time. And the other predictable parts were the love interest, you know, obvious sex jokes and obvious romance and, you know, love conquers all, which I don't mind as a theme. I don't mind those things as a theme. And I don't think that they overplayed their hand there. And that's what I was really worried on. I really did want to make sure that, you know, she was still strong as an independent, you know, not because of, you know, anyone else, you know, even another woman, you know, whatever. But no, so, I mean, you know, the end where she gets her extra oomph from her love, you know, and all that kind of stuff is, to me, was definitely, I don't know, again, expected. And I wonder if they could have done that differently, but I wasn't mad at it. You know, I'm like, all right, it was still...
She kind of but what's interesting, though, is when we pick her up in Batman and Superman, it seems like she's retreated from the world, and that's the first time she's put the costume on again, right? Like, didn't you get that sense?
They did give us that sense, but I don't know. I think that they left that open to be interpreted either way. And she definitely said, like, you know, I walked away from humanity or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they wanted to necessarily close out the idea of, if they do more movies, you know, why not keep it open to different time frames? Or, you know, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, no,
maybe that's just me. I always am like,
yeah,
keep an open door. You never know what you want to do next.
and that's the thing too with her. Like, I thought she was attractive in Batman versus Superman, but again, she wasn't anyone that I was like, oh wow, she's, you know, gorgeous. I think it was her personality, because she didn't really do much in Batman versus Superman.
Mm-hmm.
The best part of that movie was at the end when she's fighting. But
yes.
But I think I was really surprised, and it's mean to say this, but I was really surprised what a good actress she was, because they didn't really give her much to do in Batman versus Superman.
Right.
And I felt like she really, in this movie, she played the innocent, but the not innocent at the same time. Like, she's...
Yeah, no, I think she did an amazing job.
Yeah, and in getting to know her better, it made her, to me, more attractive. Because like I said, she just kind of looked like a runway model in the first one who got to put on Wonder mm-hmm. Woman outfit, where I got the sense this was a real person in this film, you know?
Right. So. Yeah. Again, and there were a few, like, every movie has those moments where they've got the comic relief, and then maybe I'm like, okay, did they?
I don't know. Yeah.
Some of it didn't seem to flow as well as everything else, but I definitely still, like, as much as I can see this movie's flaws, because I don't want to be one of those people that's just like, it's the best movie ever because chicks rule and vaginas are forever.
Yeah, you know, I know. Like, yeah. I know people are going a little crazy like that.
They are. But it is, I mean, it was really good, and it was really wonderful and so empowering. And I know that that's another thing that people are maybe going to overuse. But as somebody who is a woman and has a uterus, you know, it really was empowering to see that strength on camera, and those women who were all beautiful, and maybe not in the traditional sense that people normally would say so, but they're gorgeous. You know, these 10-foot-tall, you know, giant women of all shapes and sizes and ages. And that was huge. I mean, she was the only kid on the island, which of course is part of her backstory. I love that we got to see so much of her backstory. And I have to say, I was the first one to be like, oh God, as soon as I saw the little kid open the film, because everybody knows I am not a big fan of child actors. So I'm great. Great. Here we go again, Maleficent. You know what I mean?
Thanks,
but no,
Anakin.
It was fine. Yeah exactly. But it was good. It was really well done. And it helped develop the rest of the Amazons. And it helped develop everything else. And just seeing that power on screen is... It might be hard for other people to understand why that strikes such a chord. Because even I was kind of surprised by myself and my own reaction, even though I was expecting to be empowered, I still was like, oh my God, this is genuinely touching me. Like, this is genuinely giving me this elated glow from within, seeing this finally happen on screen. And I'm getting practically choked up talking about it, just because I can't even express how much I love superheroes, how much I love movies, how much I love this whole world that we get to, you know, take part in any kind of escape and entertainment. And to have something so reverent was really special. And and the fact that it was directed by a woman. I know I had one of my people in another movie group that I'm in ask, you know, are you going to go see it because it's got a woman director? Do you think it's just pandering, you know, whatever? And I'm like, you know what, even if it is just pandering, I'll support it, because I want more of it, you know. And I mean, well, it doesn't necessarily mean
it's not like she was just like out of a cat. I mean, she directed Monster, which was a great
film. No, exactly.
And it's one of those that was one of those movies that Showtime showed every 10 minutes, so when I was working there, so I saw Monster a lot of times. So I, you know, I knew she was very talented. I was just surprised when they chose her, because to me, she seemed more like an independent film, and it seemed like I wondered if she could handle the bigness of it, because, you know, an independent filmmaker could get swallowed up by having to do Zack Snyder's, you know, type giant special effects. But that's what was perfect about
Edgar Wright
casting.
Walked away from Ant-Man. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's not even people just from independent films. It's just, you know, it is a total different kind of movie and machine. And she hasn't necessarily signed on for any more. I don't know that she's going to come back on to direct more. I don't know what kind of experience she had.
She said on not Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers, she said she'd definitely be back for another one. So let's hope.
Okay, good.
Let's hope they won't. I mean, I can't imagine that they would get rid of her because, I mean.
No, why would they? Yeah.
They need, you know, they need the Josh Whedon of, to
the center. Josh Whedon.
Yeah, I mean, they always need somebody to center the story, you know, to stay with it.
They do. And this, again, I think the other reason that this struck everybody so directly, it wasn't even just because it was a female story, but it really was the first DC film that we've seen that was light like that, you know, and not that it was a light, you know, it was still a heavy story, but not in the same way. I mean, it really redirected in a positive way that still kept it consistent with this dark DCU that they have in their films, but like made it better.
Well, what was great too is, you know, she talked about, you know, she was a fan of Christopher Reeve's Superman movie, and here's the difference. She was a fan of it, and you can see parts of it. You can see little homages to it, like especially like the bullet scene, definitely like an homage to the Superman Christopher Reeves movie. And now that's how you do it. You don't do it the way Bryan Singer did, where he just completely, you know, shit the bed with by saying, all right, well, let's just, you know, let's just make a whole movie that looks exactly like that other movie, but not as good, you know, with Superman Lives or whatever. I don't even remember the name of the movie.
Superman Returns.
It's Superman Returns. Like that's how you make an homage. You don't just copy the movie and say, because that's the thing. I did feel that great sense of wonder that you had when you saw that the original Superman movie. But then it also, you could feel it tied in. Like, I wanted to see. Oh, and that was the other thing. It really did feel like its own movie. Like, if nobody ever saw Batman versus Superman or never went to see another of the DC movies.
Oh, yeah. It stands alone. 100%. Yeah.
It's not open-ended. It's this, you know, it could end there and you could never see another Wonder Woman movie again. Yeah. And it would be a complete story, you know. And it was very curious or very interesting, the origin story they chose, because there's so many versions of that story. Like that's the one that they chose with Zeus being her father. That's not the most, like the thing with the first story that she hears, that she was made from clay. That's actually a real origin story where that actually was the case for many years until the reboot, where then they decided, you know, she's the daughter of Zeus and I forget her mother's name. But it took a lot of great elements. I was really happy with it. Like I was
happy with it too.
You know?
Yeah, and there has been some pushback, and there are a couple points that I think that are solid, and there are a couple points that I think are very reaching. And the ones that I've been the most surprised by were the racial pushbacks that people were saying, and not because of Wonder Woman and her race, but because of the rest of the movie. People were saying that it was not really very representative to a lot of groups, and people were saying that there was if it had different ethnicities in it, or even in the Amazon, you know, Themyscira, that they were like token. And I'm like, I know that I am Caucasian, and I try to be as sensitive as I can when I'm analyzing statements like that, but I'm like, this movie to me seemed very inclusive. Yes, the main characters might have been light-skinned, but there were so many people who weren't, you know what I mean? And there was even the ragtag bandits that they go along with all were from different backgrounds. And
That's right.
I was really surprised by that.
You had the Indian, and you had the what's his name? The Spanish guy and from Spain. And Yeah, you know, it's funny because this movie didn't hit me that way. I even heard weird pushback about, like, you know, from Fox News about how
she wasn't Wonder patriotic
Woman's,
enough.
Yeah, well, she wasn't American enough, and they were commenting on the fact that she's Israeli and the actress, and that it is funny that all the other Amazons had to speak with an Israeli accent just to make it all make sense.
But I liked that, though.
Yeah, I did too. I did, but I didn't
I thought it suited everything. Yeah.
Like it didn't pull me out of it. The only time I was even aware of that was when the stupid Fox News even said it, and I was like, oh, yeah. I guess so. You know, I didn't really think about it, but I just think it gets to a point where, like, there was even that pushback on Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and you know, where they were talking about there were no black characters in it. But again, I go back to the story and the time period.
Right. And that's what I thought, too. I'm like, how could they make Chris Pine an African-American in that time frame?
Right. Because he, and especially being a spy, like, he wouldn't have been able to hide in the German, you know.
Right. But it's not to say that we don't want more representation.
Him. Yeah,
exactly. It's not to say that at all. It's just, I agree. It's just making sense for the story. And I felt like they really were as inclusive as possible. I mean, I really felt like, holy crap, you know, the main woman is Israeli. And all of the Iscariot was filled with different races. And all of, I mean, even in Germany, I felt like you were seeing different faces than you would normally see. I don't know. Or normally see it in, like, a whitewashed film, you know, or something like that. Where I'm like,
it seemed authentic.
This seems like a misplaced anger. Now, I will say there was one comment in that article that I do agree with, and I thought was weird at the time as well. When they're at the campfire, and she's asking the Native American about, you know, where are your people, or what happened to your people, and or who killed your people, or whatever it was. And he's like, oh, his people did. And you know, motioned to Chris Pine, indicating white people. And she didn't have anything to say about it. And you could see that she was kind of sitting back and being like, because she's thinking about man, and she's thinking about his temptations. And at this point, she still thinks they're all under the influence of Aries.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was interesting to me that they did bring up that topic, which I thought was good. But it was kind of, you know, lame duck. You know,
it's just kind of there. I'm just trying to think of how do you even continue that conversation. You know what I mean? It's like
but maybe she could have brought it up to Chris Pine and been like, you know, not to hold him directly responsible or anything like that. Just be more curious about it. Like, what happened there? Just anything to kind of give that thought a resolution, you know, but instead she, like, takes him to bed the next night or something, you know, whatever. So
congratulations.
So I do think I can agree with that point for sure. Cause that did feel weird even when I was watching it, but otherwise, I mean, I really do think that overall this movie hit the right notes. It really tried to do, I think it accomplished everything that it was trying to do, you know. And I think that if they can try and reel things in, I'm a little worried for Justice League because there's so much going on in that film.
But
I'm still excited for it.
And it's terrible what happened, but I don't know if you heard
story about Zack Snyder.
Yeah, he had a back out for a little while, and Josh Whedon's kind of coming in, which is a weird in itself because he's jumping over to DC.
Well, I guess they're friends, you know?
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
But terrible reasons why. But you know, but it's, you know, family tragedies. I mean, should take precedence over a movie. You know, it's But that's a weird. And I don't even think it's that much stuff. It's just like reshoots and stuff like that. That
it is reshoots. Yeah, and for anybody listening who's not quite sure what we're talking about, Zack Snyder's daughter died, and he and his wife are backing away for the rest of the reshoots for the filming of Justice League, and Joss Whedon will be directing. And originally they were going to continue to work and were trying, they had actually been working for like 2 weeks. And then because they thought that throwing themselves into it would be a good thing. But then they were like, you know what? We can't, you know, we need the time. Our other children need the time. Like, we all need to recover. And of course everyone is completely supportive. And as much as, again, I am not a huge fan of how Zack Snyder has treated this entire universe, but I 100% respect him as a director and as a human, and I hope that his family is able to recover and get the rest and support that they need, and of course all of our good juju to them.
Yeah, and I guess Josh, he even said himself, he's just basically doing what was already on paper.
Yes, you know, it's not like exactly. It's not going to reflect his rewrites.
Movie. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still Zach's movie for sure.
But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see Justice League, and then especially after Wonder Woman, because you really now you feel like you have a anchor character that you could pay attention to. You know,
Which is funny because I know that it's so strange, and I know that, you know, Batman versus Superman, at the end, Superman dies, but how long does he really stay dead in the comics, right? So,
yeah.
And at the end of that, you know, you see the little Earth shake a little bit, and so it's weird to see a Justice League film without Superman as the center character, you know? I mean, that is strange. And you almost assume that your next person up would be Batman because he's so recognizable, you know, to everybody. But I'm really glad that, well, or at least I'm really hoping that they do kind of continue this Wonder Woman centered, you know, I mean, just because she has been the most relatable, you know,
she's the most interesting. Weird way. You know, because I really, you know, I go back and I look at Man of Steel now, where I was, you remember, I was so on the fence with that film, and it's like, I don't know how to feel yet until I think I see the next one. And the more I go back, I'm like, I really don't like that actor. I don't really like his portrayal of Superman or his choices or what. Yeah. You know,
that's
really
the thing. Like,
he
looks the
that.
Part. He does look the part, but I don't really get. I didn't connect with him either, you know, in either one of those films.
Yeah.
And that's tough. You want to connect with Superman. I always think to myself, well, Superman, as much as I loved Christopher Reeve and I loved Superman growing up, I was always more of a Batman person. So, I mean, I thought maybe it's just my inherent, you know, like, Superman is cool, but he's kind of like the Boy Scout of all Boy Scouts. So maybe that's why I'm not connecting, but... You know, I really liked Christopher Reeves, and I really, I always feel so bad for Brandon Routh, because even though I didn't care for Superman Returns, I thought he was cast well. I didn't think it was his fault that that movie didn't do well. I think that his script could have been better, and his story certainly could have been better, but I really did.
He was fine. I mean,
I liked him.
He was it was unfair, because they essentially wanted him to be a clone of Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
And he was, essentially. He got his voice down. He had I liked him as Clark Kent. I never had any problem with him. My problem was just the movie and the and the villain, you know. How do you mess up two times now? How do you mess up Lex Luthor? You know, it's like
I know. And that's just it. I rewatched Batman versus Superman after I watched Wonder Woman, because, you know, why not ride that train? But but yeah, I just can't get over that Lex. I don't like him. And I don't really care for Superman very much. And I cannot stand the portrayal of Lois Lane. And I don't dislike that actress. It's so frustrating when you're like, I like these actors. I like these actresses. I just don't like what I'm seeing on screen, and it's not even their fault. You know?
She was just miscast. What's weird, too, is it's not like I thought the one from Superman Returns, I forget what her even name was. It's not that I thought she was the greatest Lois Lane, but at least she felt like a Lois Lane.
I genuinely am, like, blanking on her even face. Like, I can't remember who played her at all.
I think in real life she's a blonde, I think, but they made her a brunette, and I can't remember her name. I've seen her in so many movies in small parts, and again, like I said, it wasn't like she did anything memorable, but the Lois Lane look is such a distinctive look, like from the comics, dark hair, you know, just or even if it's short hair or long hair, you know, it's always like you have an image, and they really. With Amy Adams, the first time I heard her name, I'm like, I don't, you know, if they said if she was going to be Lana, I could understand, but I don't see Lois Lane for her, you know. So that was mistake number one, because then you have a movie that hinges on her, and if you don't care about her, you know, it's unfair to say, because it's not, I don't have a problem with Amy Adams, but I do have a problem with that character.
That's exactly it. Like, I don't have a problem with her at all, and I feel so bad about bashing, because I'm not down on her. I'm not even mad at her. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is not your fault, baby. You do you. Get all that money. Mm-hmm. But it makes me sad that I didn't see a good representation, you know, of what I would imagine. So I don't know. But speaking of more superhero movies, the trailer for Black Panther came out.
Oh, yeah.
And looks so much fun. Mm-hmm. It's definitely still, you can tell that they're still rendering some graphics and stuff. There's some unfinished shots, I feel like, in there. But it looks so beautiful. And that cast, the cast looks so beautiful. Every single one of them. I just am in love with what I'm seeing so far. So I cannot wait. Although I have to say, I don't know if you saw the poster where he's just sitting on the throne.
Yeah, I did
that. Totally looked budget to me. I was just like, what are you doing with this poster?
Yeah, it kind of looked like a Blade poster, right? Like it was like low rent.
The king deserves a little better.
Yeah. But it was interesting to see the trailer start with Martin Freeman and what's his name?
Yes.
Andy.
Yeah.
Because I wondered when they first introduced Martin Freeman, I'm like, who, you know, and then he had such a small part. I was saying to myself, well, what's
he going to he's going to be similar to the Coulson type, you know?
Yeah.
As like a government person to move the story along and connect dots, you know? Not that anybody can replace Coulson, I'm just saying, you know?
I know, I hear you. But they can't bring Coulson back because he's too convoluted now in his own
show. Well, right, now he's got the show. Which, I mean, I still have been current on, and that was pretty cool. I like the Ghost Rider stuff they did. This time around.
Yeah, I've been reading synopsis. I kind of dropped out during the second season, so I'm way behind. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I had dropped out for a while too, and then caught back up.
Now, speaking of, we talked about Twin Peaks. Have you seen any of the new Twin Peaks?
Oh yeah, I'm up to date. They've got 5 episodes now, I think.
Yeah, you know, a warning to everybody: if you're going to watch the show, the new one, try to do it during the day and not do it at night when you're tired.
Because, he's just going to keep falling asleep.
Holy moly. That second episode, I must have watched that 3 times, like where I had to keep restarting it because I would wake up like the credits.
Oh,
I'm like, what happened?
Funny.
You know, man,
that is so funny.
You know, and they only have me because I was such a fan of that show and I'm really curious to see where it's going. But holy moly, did they test? They tested my patience. They woke me, and this is so sad. My favorite character in the whole show so far is Wally Brando, only because he seemed like such a real Twin Peaks character that would have just because he was just so. It was Michael Cera. He's the son of what's the Andy and I forget her name.
And, the receptionist.
It is so weird and funny, and
it's so weird.
Yeah. Oh my God. My favorite is that. I mean, he's telling the sheriff, you know, that the reason he came back was to tell them they could have his bedroom, you know, to use as a study.
They could remodel his bedroom to use as a study.
And you're listening, and it's great because you're like, this guy doesn't give a shit about any of this stuff, you know. But God! In that speech that he gave, I was like. Afterwards, I'm like, you know what? Wally Brando is my dharma. You know, like that was my. I love
it. Yeah, I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. Oh.
The accent, it's so good. Like, it's just. Yeah,
perfect.
It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. That show, I feel like that entire show is a test of patience, though, because it's so interesting and you want to know what's happening, but you'll get like whole episodes and you're just like. What even happened in this episode?
Exactly. I know.
How is any of this connected? Like, aside
and you're just,
from...
and you know, the movie, I did you get to watch the movie yet?
No.
It is important.
I still haven't seen it. Watch.
It is important.
Oh, it is important. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the one thing I'll say is there is enough in that movie that you probably should watch. Because,
I meant to watch it before this one started and then I jumped the gun.
Yeah, because even just David Bowie's character, they mention him a lot in the show, and there was, I blanked on the term now, but there's something they mention they mentioned a phrase, Blue Canary, I can't even remember the name, but they mentioned something that is in the movie that you would only remember if you saw the movie. And then what's also weird too is every time you go to the bar, and then you don't know, is this the end credits now? And then there's a scene, you know?
Yep, because everything, it always seems to end at the bar with the band playing some song, and then all of a sudden credits roll over, you know, but sometimes it just doesn't.
I know. It just keeps going, and you're like,
oh, it's so great.
And I love that they bring
so
Bobby
weird.
Back
just
to cry, you know, because he's the best crier on TV. I'm like, wow, this guy's still crying 20 years, 25 years later.
It was
and he's
so
still...
good. Yeah. Oh, my God. And it looks exactly the same. Like, mm-hmm. His face is so unique. Yeah. Like, the planes on his face, I feel like Lionel Richie sculpted him. Or, like, no, the woman in Lionel Richie's, you know,
yeah,
Hello
blind
video
lady. Yeah.
Just kind of sculpted him out of clay because he's got such interesting dimensions.
Yeah.
But,
now, it's interesting the sheriff didn't come back. I read this whole article about how he was going to come back, but he couldn't find his jacket. And then he finally, this is true. And he finally found his jacket for the part, but then he decided not to do it. So then that's why they got, what's his name? Robert Forster to play that part. So he's not playing the same part. He's playing his brother. And they make an inference in the show that he's sick. Like he's got, you know, they kind of hint that maybe he has cancer or something like that.
And that's why
I don't know if you remember that weird scene when Robert Forster walks in and she just starts screaming, the receptionist, because she was expecting the brother. Like I tell you, I rewatched, I fell back into that pattern of,
no,
of
that's
the original
not because
show.
She was expecting the brother. That was because
she was
using
on the phone,
a cell
with him,
phone.
But she thought she was talking to the other guy. Not this guy. Yeah. And so that's why she started screaming, which made sense at the time. I'm like, what's going on? And then as I kept rewatching it, and then I started reading articles, and then there's also a book called by Mark Frost called The Secrets of Twin Peaks, where it gives you more backstory. I got sucked in big time, let's just say, back into this world.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I thought she just had a freak out because of the cell phone. Yeah. She didn't understand how cell phones worked. And then all of a sudden he was in front of her and she's like,
I know, I know. I also think they're hinting that she has Alzheimer's, I guess, too, which is weird.
Well.
But yeah, no, it's interesting, you know?
It is interesting.
I'm very curious about tonight because I actually was excited because I thought they were going to put more online after they put like the first four. But now we're up to one a week, and I'm like, oh, that's going to be torture, you know, just
no, but that's I intentionally, when they had those four up and I saw that the next ones weren't coming out until later, I was like, okay, I'm gonna watch one a week, and I was good and I stuck to it.
Oh, nice.
So that I didn't like have that gap of, you know, let me watch four and then have to wait a month, you know.
I know, yeah, that was my mistake. I thought, I read something that they said for people on Showtime on the website, you were going to get more episodes, and then turned out not to be the case.
Something else though that I think we both saw in theaters was Alien Covenant.
Oh yes,
did you get to go see that?
Yes, I did. I did.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, no, I mean, I liked it. I thought I didn't. You know, a lot of people were like, "Well, it was definitely better than the last one." I like the last one.
Oh, I didn't think it was better than the last one.
Yeah, I thought the last one had a lot of interesting subplots. I thought this one, I liked a lot of it, but it did fall into, it definitely was a retread of Aliens, right? I mean, Alien.
Right.
Just on a lower, less tense version.
Well, this is the thing. Okay, so first of all, Prometheus is amazing, and I love that movie. And it is a terrible movie, and I am not going to argue with anybody about it. I totally understand if you hate that movie. There's plots so big you could fly the Nostromo through, you know, like plot holes so big. But I mean, it seriously is. Characters were written poorly. The dialogue was terrible. Honestly, like, you don't care if anybody dies, you know, like, I totally get it. But I love that movie. Like, there's so many interesting ideas. There's so many interesting and beautiful visuals. I mean, it's, to me, that movie I could just talk about forever. I could write, you know, a senior thesis on it at Harvard or whatever. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah. Whatever it is they do there.
yeah, but that's what they do. They write senior theses on movies. I think Police Academy was the last one someone did.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm like Elle Woods only.
yeah, yeah.
whatever. This one, and I was worried about this. Like, I know Ridley Scott had said, like, hey, we heard your feedback on Prometheus because it didn't do well, and people were like, where is the fucking alien? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on? And so don't worry, there's going to be aliens in this one. We're going to make it a horror. Don't worry. We got you. We listened to you. And I was worried. I'm like, oh, crap. Just because he's going to want to try and sate everybody else's, like, gore factor, which I like gory movies too, don't get me wrong, but I was worried that it might damage the overall film, you know, because to be quite honest, his film, the first one, Alien, was not really gory. I mean, it was, I think, for the time, but only in like one or two scenes. Like for the most part, it was just suspense. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of blood aside from that chestburster kind of scene.
Yeah, yeah.
So with this one, I do feel like they run into the same challenge trying to make you care about these characters in a short amount of time while starting to kill them, you know, early enough to try and keep the movie going quickly. And they definitely succeeded in, you know, bringing the alien quickly and trying to get, you know, everything moving. And I loved all the stuff seeing, the ship come with David and Shaw and all of that kind of stuff. Like, I want to see all of that, you know, and I like the idea of David kind of going crazy and performing experiments and, you know, kind of doing different things with the aliens and stuff. But it definitely suffered from that, like, stereotypical horror movie, like, okay, I'm going to go take a shower five rooms down the hall.
Well, that's what
die.
I was going to say. The one thing with that, I did feel like the movie had ended and it felt like they needed to fill, they didn't reach the quota of what they needed to do, right? Because didn't that feel tacked on? It was weird because I felt like the movie legitimately ended and then it felt like, okay, let's add an extra half hour of action.
and it was super predictable.
I mean that was, you know, spoiler alert, but yeah, that was so, the minute he cut his hair, I knew that was going to happen, you know, like David.
I know exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you knew as soon as that happened. But what was so really funny, genuinely funny, because James went to the theater with me for this one, and as we were leaving, he's like, you know, as scary as that movie was, the fucking flute scene. And I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, that's true.
You're right. Yeah. But I really did. I thought that when they had that scene and he was like, you know, using the flute, I thought that David was going to shove it through
Walter's
throat. I totally thought that he was going to kill him right there.
That's what I thought too, yeah.
And then it didn't happen. And I'm like, oh, okay.
And it was definitely an uneven movie. But there was something, I don't know what it was. It was something about it that it didn't, in the way that I felt about Prometheus, I guess, where it didn't disappoint me so much. I just kind of went with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I was just kind of like, okay, I wonder where the third one's going to go, you know?
Right. And I totally get that, you know, they, in order to have more aliens, they basically needed more hosts. And here's a plot point that we can get more hosts, you know? I mean,
they also cleaned up, he basically cleaned up his, you know, the gods, the crew, what are they called?
Oh, the engineers.
Creators? Engineers. I mean, I guess we're done. We're not going to see them anymore. You know,
yeah, we're done with that. Yeah. But, what I did think was weird, and I wondered, you know, why and how this happened, though, was that we saw eggs for the facehuggers, but no queen. And so, like, did David design a queen and we didn't see her anywhere? And I mean, how could he design the eggs but nothing to lay them? Yeah. So that was kind of weird to me, but I'm like, whatever.
But there was something different about them still, right? Like, I was trying to...
Well, they were pretty...
They were pretty close to what
they were. Yeah, they were pretty much them.
Yeah. So then that means
they had the little 4-point, you know, open up and the little sheath come out, and then the face huggers were just the same. You know, I mean, maybe there was like small artistic differences, but nothing that was really readable.
Yeah.
In a single viewing. I mean, I obviously haven't gone back through and watched again, or, you know.
I mean, the one thing I did think about, and again, it didn't mess up the movie for me, but I just wondered, well, why would you take the nature and science, the nature out of it, and make it more about a scientific discovery and that they're created rather than, you know, seeing the story of how these things evolved on their own? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, I think that that's because David was probably the best thing that came out of Prometheus, and they wanted a way to keep him going and keep him relevant. I mean, they had Michael Fassbender do a great performance and a very interesting character, and he really was, you know, the best character in Prometheus. And and so to have something that's more like a villain, someone on their side, and he was so obsessed with creation and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I get that. I was okay with that.
I did like that they gave him a little bit of humanity in the other one, the other version.
Yeah.
Where he was kind of in love with
Shaw.
Yeah. Which was interesting.
Or Walter and the other chick, yeah. I thought that was cool, too.
Yeah. So
I know, I really didn't want Walter to die altogether.
Yeah.
I knew that he was going to, you know, have to get taken out of the picture for at least a little while, but I didn't really want him to really die.
Well, at first I thought they were going to leave it where he was just, you know, he was just abandoned on the planet. But then he basically laid out how he killed him, so then I said, well, okay, well, I guess... Yeah. That's that for that character.
I guess that's that. I know. It's too bad. Poor Walter.
You know.
Poor Walter. But yeah, so it didn't blow me away. I wasn't like, I didn't leave the theater going, oh, that was awesome. But I wasn't like mad at it either. I just was kind of like, yeah, that's probably about what I was expecting. You know,
Just
kind of lukewarm on that one.
I think that's what it was. I didn't really have, I kind of, the way I went in on Prometheus, I didn't go in with all of these expectations, so to speak.
Yeah.
I kind of went in just... You know, anything is better than Aliens versus Predator 2.
Oh my god, that's so true. That's so true.
So, you know, after that, I'm, you know, no Danny Glover in Predator. Yeah.
The only thing that I really like, this is another thing that happened in Prometheus, and I just am like, okay, these people on these space exploration missions are too dumb to fucking live, though, because they stomp around alien environments with no helmets on and no, you know, like,
yeah, I know.
Just like, well, you're stupid and yeah, you're gonna die because look at you.
You show up to a planet that's just perfectly green, has an environment, and you think, oh, there's no animals or any kind of ecosystem I can detect, but it seems livable for us, you know. Mm-hmm. like there's got to be something wrong, you know, with what's happening here.
And I get that they have sensors to read like the air content and the quality and all that stuff. I get that it's science fiction and they should have stuff like that, but there have to be unknown elements if you've never put foot on a planet before, you know. Yeah, what I mean. Yeah. Like, there has to be an element of the unknown there that you have to protect yourself from, and I'm just like, oh my god, are you kidding me?
I think
I'm
it
just
was.
Gonna go...
I was just thinking when you said the unknown elements. I think it was funny the way they killed what's his name, James Franco, in a very Planet of the Apes like way. You know, just have him die in his little shell thing and never have to be in the movie actually, which was the weirdest because a lot of people didn't even recognize that was him that I've spoken to, and so. Yeah. But they did recognize him once he's climbing the mountains, and it was kind of like, wait, what the hell is James Franco doing in this movie?
Right. And you know what's really funny? Again, I know that we on the previous podcast, I was like, James Franco? And because in the trailer, I thought it was Billy Crudup in the thing. I just didn't read that it was another character for some reason. And then, yeah, I totally get the like man of religion kind of thing that he was, and I get that idea. Mm-hmm. But just as a leader, though, he was really horrible. Didn't have anything to do with his religion. I'm just like, dude, you just
he screwed.
You just kind of terrible.
So now, did you go back and watch the shorts again after seeing the movie?
No, and I, yeah, because in the movie, they were in the movie, weren't they?
Well,
I thought they were separate, but...
Well, the James Franco one wasn't, though. That one...
Oh, right, but I thought maybe that was cut, so that was something separate entirely?
Yeah, it seemed like, yeah, because it was its own, because it literally, watching it again, it did explain, because there's a scene where James Franco tells him that, what's her name, is going to give the speech, and he's like, he tells him, oh, but I had these prepared words, and he goes, no, she's going to give the speech. So he walks away, and then, again, Billy Crudup is about to speak, and she says, he wanted me to talk. So it's like all of that, and when you're watching it, you don't really get what's happening, but now after seeing the movie, you know, because of all of that tension, now you really see why he was so paranoid about why people didn't like him, because the captain really didn't like him, you know, James Franco's character. So it was interesting watching that again, but I could see why... I mean, it must...
In the movie, it might not have played because there wasn't a whole lot of lead-up to it.
Yeah, it would just started and it would have... And I think seeing James Franco in that scene, you would have been thrown off because you were like, you know, you'd be expecting more. And it was just weird. That was like one of those cameos that I think they were hoping was going to be like Psycho, where, you know, Janet Leigh's the star of this movie. You know?
Right.
But it just didn't work out that way, so that's probably why they lessened
it. I kind of love it when movies do that, though. There's, like, Executive Decision did that. That was really fun. And what was... There was like, a horror movie.
Scream did that with Drew Barrymore.
Scream did that, for sure.
Yeah.
But there was another one that I was thinking of, and I can't remember the name of it, because it's kind of like a B-horror film, but... It had a well-known actor. I think it was Mark Sloan from Grey's Anatomy. I don't know his real name.
I don't know who that is. So I'm like, oh, who?
He's McSteamy.
Oh, that's it.
But anyway, he was like they introduced him as the hero, and there was like all these monsters attacking some sort of like, I don't know, diner or something like that. And... it was hilarious because the first 20 minutes of the movie was like them introducing a new hero, and it would even like pause and be like, the hero.
Oh,
and then all of a sudden the monsters would get him, and then they'd be like, the next hero. And then the monsters would get that person.
Mm-hmm.
They went through like five protagonists before they finally
You know, got movie, anywhere. That movie is, it was a Project Greenlight film. It was,
That was hilarious. That's all I remember about it, but I loved that part.
Yeah, that was the one that the guy won the contest, the Matt Damon and Van Affleck contest.
Oh, cool.
And so that director, and then they had a script, and then the director was chosen. And he was actually very talented, so that's why the movie did come out as well as it did. But it's interesting because you could see, if you want to see the making of the whole movie, it's the series of Project Greenlight Season 3, I think. But I just blanked on the name of the movie, but I really like that movie as well. I know they made sequels to it. I didn't bother with those, but the first one was good. Because it has that the hero interesting style, you know, the way mm-hmm. the way it's done. You just reminded me of something too that I was going to say. I just completely blanked. We had talked about Love Actually a couple of weeks ago.
Oh yeah, I still didn't watch that. I know Red Nose Day happened, and so they released the short, and I didn't actually sit down and watch it.
Do yourself a favor, stay away from the American version of that, because here's what they did. This is so stupid. The British version showed them all in order. I mean, they showed it all together as one short film. The American version showed it in segments, would go to a break and then show a completely different segment of something else. And then say, hey, let's go back to and see what's happening with the Love Actually characters. And they added...
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was horrible the way they presented it. And then the one scene that was added that wasn't in the British one, which seemed like they threw it together, was Laura Linney's character. They mm-hmm. showed what happened to her. And the only reason I remembered Love Actually is because you mentioned McSteamy, and I thought of McDreamy, mm-hmm. and because he's in that... sequence, so which was,
oh really
yeah, so that's the only connection, but but they cut out what I thought was one of the best sections in the British version, which was the rock star, the old rock star character.
Yeah.
They had they do an interview with him in the British version. They didn't even bother showing that. You know, it said he's doing a radio interview. They didn't even bother showing that in the American version of the.
He was one of the best characters in the film. Why on earth would you nick?
Yeah, I don't.
Segment. That's weird.
I thought that was weird. The whole American version of Red Nose was weird, to be honest with you. Because after having seen the British version and then seeing this one, I'm like, I don't know what they were doing. So if you can find it online, the other one.
I'll have to take a look.
But I didn't get much fanfare, so I don't know if people really got that it was the sequel, so to speak, you know. But yeah.
Interesting.
Otherwise, and anyway, I think we've smashed a bunch of cuts for the evening.
Yeah, there was, you know, it hasn't even been that long since we recorded, and there was already so much to talk about, and there's still so much I have ready to talk about next time. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff coming out. There's tons of stuff we still haven't even gotten to, and, you know, there's video games. And I will leave you with this. There's a theater that opened near where my parents live in Queens. That is an IMAX VR theater. Have you heard of these at all?
I know about like the 4D kind of thing. Is it not that? Is it something more than that?
It's something completely different. It essentially is. And I'm trying to understand the IMAX part of it, but it almost looks like an amusement park. Like it's in a real theater and it's sectioned off. But you go in, you buy tickets like a real theater, and then when you go in, they give you the VR headset. So all I see is people in a blank room, in a section of a room. Like, you know, if you go to a convention center and you see, like, people wearing VR glasses and shooting and stuff like that, that's almost what it looks like. But it's, and each movie, if you buy tickets for, like, they have the Star Wars VR, which is 7 minutes. I don't know how much tickets are, but it just looks so weird. And there's one point where you see somebody rolling around the floor shooting. And I'm like, what is he seeing? And and you see someone guiding him. I'm like, what is happening? Like, I can't even imagine what this is. So I'm curious. I don't know when I'll get to try it. But
heck yeah, man. You got to definitely check that out and report back.
Yeah, I got to see what this is about. But apparently this is a new thing that IMAX is trying to put in theaters everywhere. It's called IMAX VR. So check it out on YouTube just to see. It just looks... it's not like you get to really see anything. You know, it just looks weird. So we'll see what it's all about.
You definitely need to do some investigative reporting.
Yeah. I have to tell where I have to leave early because I have some IMAX for you. Get back in your cubicle, you know, your office. You know. Anyway, on that note, well. I'm sure next time there's more big movies coming out. Spider-Man for me is the next big one. I can't wait to see. Baby Driver. Now that I know what that is.
Yes, Baby Driver looks good.
Because the name would make me think it was like, you know, some kid's baby movie that's coming out. Yeah. You know,
Baby's Day Out, Baby's Driver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So thankfully it's not that. So. But yeah, so we'll talk to everybody next time.
Awesome. Adios.